Listener supported. WNYC Studios.
It's the Brian Lehrer Show on WNYC. Good morning again, everyone. Now we'll talk about the Republicans holding that congressional seat in the hard-fought special election outside Atlanta yesterday. The stealth care bill being crafted in secret by a few Senate Republicans to repeal and replace the Affordable Care Act and rush it to a vote, and more with Katrina VandenHeuvel, editor and publisher of The Nation magazine and a Washington Post columnist. Hey, thanks for doing this, Katrina. Welcome back to WNYC.
Good morning, Brian. Thank you for having me.
So despite the big Democratic Party effort, despite everything the country has been through already in 150 days of Trump, Republican Karen Handel won that election. What do you think it means?
Don't overread it. Don't be demoralized. Let's remember the whole reason these special elections were happening is Trump appointed sitting House members to his cabinet.
Katrina, I'm going to jump in because your phone line is breaking up real bad.
Oh, no.
Is there
can
something?
You hear me?
I can hear you, but it's really choppy. I don't think the listeners can stay with it for very long. Can you do something to position yourself?
Is that better?
Let's give it a shot. That might be.
Let's give it a shot. I just think Republicans had to fight real hard to hold these deep red districts, and that I think is something to fix on. It's worth remembering that the two seats last night were won by Republican candidates 7 months ago by 23.4, 20.5 points respectively.
You know what? Hang on. It's not working. We're going to call you back on your other line. I know you have another line that we can try. And listeners, in the meantime, we'll invite your phone calls for Katrina VandenHeuvel, editor and publisher of The Nation and Washington Post columnist these days. And how about on the Georgia election? Listeners, what's the lesson for you, if any, in the Republican win in Georgia's 6th Congressional District? 212-433-WNYC, 212-433-9692. And anything else you want to say to or ask Katrina VandenHeuvel, editor and publisher of The Nation, 212-433-WNYC, 433-9692. Listeners, who out there was following Georgia 6th, that race between Handel and Ossoff, very closely? There was so much focus on it. It became the most expensive congressional election in U.S. history. Democrats were pinning great hopes on it. I think they felt they had more to lose by losing than the Republicans had to lose by not winning. And it didn't quite work out. I have my own theory, which I want Katrina to hear and react to. But interestingly, according to a data crunch in the Times, there are only 15 congressional districts nationwide where at least half the population has a college degree. And only two of those 15 districts are represented by Republicans in Congress. And this district in Georgia is one of those two. So, Katrina, do we have you back?
You do, Brian, and I hope this is clearer.
Much,
in terms of what I say and
much,
the line.
Much, much better.
I heard what you said. No, I think, let me just say just briefly, I think it's worth remembering on this day after, and there have been, you know, three or four now special elections, that 71%, according to the Cook Political Report, 71% of congressional districts currently held by Republicans are expected to be more competitive in 2018 than Georgia's, the 6th last night. I did hear you about the education kind of levels in these districts, and I think that's really interesting because we fix a lot on different gaps and different constituencies and demographics, but I think educated versus, college-educated versus high school-educated has played out in intriguing ways in these last the last years.
Right. I guess what I was starting to get at is if there are only 15 congressional districts nationwide where at least half the population has a college degree and 13 of those 15 are already represented by Democrats, okay, so they held this one, the Republicans did. Maybe it's not very meaningful, therefore. There are exceptions to every pattern, and this pattern remains strong. More education equals more progressive politics, and there are a few exceptions, both in the South.
No, I think that's right. I mean, I think also what you're looking at is turnout. If progressives, Democrats can close the passion and commitment gap, polls do show, Brian, that a majority of Americans support what we might call progressive positions on most of the big issues. Georgia's interesting, too. Joan Walsh has been down in the 6th Congressional District for us the last few days. She did an interesting piece about Stacey Abrams, who is in the state assembly and is running to be the first African-American woman governor of Georgia. It's a struggle. It's a long fight. But she launched just the day before this 6th Congressional District election, and she's looking to put together a new coalition. She rejects the zero-sum approach that pits white working-class voters against voters of color. Working class is working class, she says, but she also wants to pull together this kind of rising American electorate of African-Americans, Latinos, young people, women. And she sees in that a possibility of what, you know, is going to be a long and promising crusade to turn Georgia blue.
And it's very hard to run that kind of a cross-racial class-based campaign. As your former colleague at The Nation, now with us here at WNYC, Kai Wright, said to me on the show, unfortunately, we learned from the fall election that race trumps class in elections time and time again.
Well, I would, with all respect for my former colleague who writes a column for The Nation these days, I'm with Stacey. I mean, I don't think it needs to be zero sum. I think work too often, you've heard the pundits, Brian. I mean, they talk about white working class. Working class is working class. Latinos, African Americans. If you speak to what is how to improve people's lives and not just talk about some litany of policies, I mean, people are suffering from high health care costs. Their kids' tuition is burning them out. They're not getting a living wage. I mean, these are things that shouldn't even be called progressive. I just think they're right and wrong, not left and right. So I think there's a way to put together a coalition that's not necessarily the New Deal, Fair Deal, Great Society coalition, but that can bridge some differences. And Stacey Abrams and others are speaking to it. I do think the real questions going forward are going to be, you know, you talked about the health care bill, Brian. I mean, will Democrats, will progressives, will a media which is often too obsessed with the scandals and palace intrigues of the Trump administration make clear how Republicans in Washington are betraying working people they claim to care about? Health care, taxes, budget. I think these are, you know, these are issues people really care about. And Trump ran, I would, you know, submit as a sham populist. And we're now getting a pretty real, not so sham plutocracy going on.
But if we are, and people aren't seeing it, if that's what the Georgia election indicates, I mean, maybe this outcome is indicative of the nation's political divide being so much deeper than about Trump pro or con. We have a portion of the country that believes health care is a right and a portion that doesn't. A portion that believes inequality is the fault of government being tilted toward the rich. A portion that believes it's from government being tilted toward the poor. And I could go down all those other things.
Right. And, but I think there's a swath of this country where you can begin to make the case if you speak. And you also, I mean, let's be honest, people learn about candidates, what's on offer from media. What I didn't say earlier, I mean, is there is this kind of view that the resistance, quote, is failing at the voting booth after these four special elections. But I, you know, think it's worth people on this, you know, listening. Down ballot races, I'm talking about city council, state legislatures, school boards, district attorneys. You're witnessing a good number of people winning. And I think it's a kind of resistance to renewal politics that shouldn't be overlooked. Sadly, the media used to cover local races and link them more to the national. We're not seeing that. But I think it's a mistake to ignore. I mean, Larry Krasner is poised to be the Democratic district attorney in Philadelphia, someone who represented Occupy Philadelphia, Black Lives Matter. Chakwe Lumumba is the new mayor of Jackson, Mississippi, Brian. Mm-hmm. So I think, you know, you see, it's Christine Pellegrino, you probably covered that race, a New York Assemblywoman. She won in the 9th district, the state assembly. She won in a district Trump won by 23%.
Yeah.
Long Island has more in common possibly with the Georgia 6th congressional district. It won for Trump in big ways, as my colleague Kai Wright reported in the WNYC U.S. of Anxiety podcast. But I think, you know, yes, but it, as I said earlier, a lot of, quote, progressive positions do have majority support.
Yeah.
It's just not, it's partly money, it's partly media, it's partly Democratic candidates not being clear. At the moment, I worry that a lot of Democrats are clear about opposition to Trump, okay, but what are we for? What are we for has to be on offer.
Great point, and also a great point, and I saw you did it in one of your columns, to raise these elections that don't get as much press because they're not congressional elections, but like the 9th Assembly District in New York and some of the other more local
right.
ones that you mentioned as an indication of something that could be as important as the congressional elections. Jim in the West Village, you're on WNYC with Katrina VandenHeuvel, editor and publisher of The Nation. Hi, Jim.
Hi. I don't know if it's time that I can actually say this because there was so much attention paid to this race, but the candidate, the young 30-year-old candidate, was inexperienced and did not have the most progressive background. And a lot of attention was paid around the Trump issue rather than the local issue. This was a woman that held statewide office. She was well-known within the district, and because this is an educated a Republican district, I think the fact that the inexperience of the actual candidate as opposed to a woman Republican candidate played very strongly. Why the Democratic National Committee put so much money into this race rather than that race where the Guardian reporter got body slammed, which they put no money
right.
in, and that candidate got 47%.
Yeah, in Montana, where...
We have a piece up at thenation.com just in the last hour, which grapples with some of what your caller is raising. I mean, I think John Ossoff, you know, he ran a campaign that was more about civility. It was more about accountability and freshness. And again, I come back, it was more about being against Donald Trump. And it's not enough, I don't think. On the other hand, what he did was instigate passion in a district where you saw real high Democratic progressive turnout for the first time. You had groups like Indivisible, you had the Working Families Party, you had Our Revolution, the Bernie Sanders electoral arm. You had people working, and I think what will be left behind is more of an organization, which can be built on.
Do you think it was a factor that Bernie was lukewarm about Ossoff originally?
You know, it is. Let me step back and not just about Bernie the person, but there are a set of issues which progressives are beginning really to rally around and which Bernie Sanders raised in 2016 and drove into the most progressive Democratic platform the party has had. My view is you drive those. It's good politics. It's smart politics to drive, you know, say we got to build on Obamacare, fight this Republican Lord of the Flies legislation, but build toward Medicare for All. There is real support for Medicare for All if you test it. Living wage. Debt-free higher tuition. These are issues that I think move people, so you need more kind of substance. And I think your caller's right. Karen Handel had a record. The structural problems in that district were real. I mean, let's remember, John Ossoff nearly won in April. He came within a point, I think, and you had about 18 Republican Democrats. They all kind of coagulated. And let's not forget something you've spent years talking about, the money piece. Can't be the absolving factor, but it is the case, enormous amounts of money, Paul Ryan's PAC, others. He raised money, Ossoff, but two-thirds of it was small donors. And I think the small donor way is the way we got to move if we're going to see people's views better represented and not just big money.
We're going to take a short break. When we come back, we'll continue with Katrina VandenHeuvel and turn to the Senate stealth care bill. Stay with us. Brian Lehrer on WNYC with Katrina VandenHeuvel, editor and publisher of The Nation. The Senate Republicans' health care bill is still being written in secret. We're calling it stealth care. John McCain is calling it a challenge for Vladimir Putin.
Maybe the Russians have been able to hack in and gotten most of it, but I haven't seen it.
McCain yesterday, kidding, but even he can't see the bill. Even the ultra-conservative Senator Mike Lee of Utah wonders if it's a rumor.
I'm told that it exists. I just haven't been able to see it yet. And as far as I know, the overwhelming majority of my colleagues haven't been able to see it either.
Katrina, what a process, huh?
What a process. Listen, I mean, you got senators who may vote on a bill to reform 1/6 of the nation's economy involving the health care of 140 million Americans. And most senators will have had no time to read this. It's partly some of this. Brian and I wrote a column, the GOP is working stealthily to shred health and financial protections for ordinary Americans. I come back to the media piece of it because it is the case that until recently, you know, the other day, none of the big papers gave coverage to the stealth healthcare movement. I think what we're also seeing is that, you know, McConnell and co., the reason for the stealth and speed is they know that these reforms, quote reforms, are incredibly unpopular. I mean, these are harmful, unpopular policies. And I think they're desperately frightened of their people going back into their districts on the July 4th recess. But we've seen, it's not just health, Brian. They're also moving on gutting financial protections for Americans. And you think it comes only 9 years after Wall Street's
excesses cratered
the economy.
We had Elizabeth Warren on that the other day.
Yeah, I mean, her great Consumer Financial Protection Bureau, one of the few innovations to really speak to and listen to working families, working people in this country, may well be gutted, stripped of its independence and authority. I think I am all for the need to cover the palace intrigues, the scandals, Trump. But I do think that some of the coverage and the over-coverage, I would argue, of the Russia issue has sucked the oxygen out of the air. I remember the other day, I think it was Chris Murphy, good senator from Connecticut, the day Sessions testified, he urged his Twitter followers to focus 90% of their attention on health care, not all of it on Sessions' bumbling testimony before the Senate Intelligence Committee. So I do worry that it sucks the air out of, it's newsworthy to a point, but it's keeping attention to exposing the gutting of health care, the gutting of financial protections for working people. And
I gather they will have 10 hours of debate available to each party when the bill is unveiled next week. And there'll be a flood of publicity at that time.
Yeah, but I mean, think about how they've held off. They've held it in secrecy. I mean, I
think I'm not defending them. I'm just saying something to
it. No, I know. You're saying it's coming.
It's coming.
Yeah, it's coming. But it is a measure of how, in their gut, these men, and they're mostly men. I mean, there's that image of 13 guys handling health care for lots of people. But in their gut, they know how deeply unpopular this is. And by the way, it disproportionately impacts and hurts their voters. But that's a larger conversation.
To tie the two main things we've been talking about together, given that health care was a big issue in the Georgia race and
yes,
the Republican won without any, loss apparently of the Republican vote from the time the primary was held in April, the first round. Does that outcome make conservative health reform more likely because they're going to look in the House and the Senate at the Georgia outcome and say, well, that, you know, people are not running away from us because we're on the verge of passing this House health care bill or something like it?
I think she played different games. I mean, the Republican candidate stepped away from, distanced herself from Karen Handel, distanced herself from Trump. For much of that race and ran a campaign focused on attacking Ossoff's character, youth, lack of residence in the district. Just like I don't think we extrapolate from even four special elections, I wouldn't extrapolate from this as mm-hmm. to what the popularity of mm-hmm. health care is mm-hmm. going to be. But well, I do, yeah.
No, go ahead. You want to finish your thought? Go ahead.
I think Democrats need to make it very, very clear how Republicans in Washington are betraying working people they claim to care about. And that has to be coupled with what they are for. And I think in that sense, this special election will have less impact. Now, you did see a lot of special money coming in. There's a reason Paul Ryan's PAC spent some $7 million or more, and there's a lot of dark money that may have seen a better outcome in the special election, help health care. But I think there's an awareness of how deeply unpopular it is.
Before you go, you brought up media malpractice, as you put it, over excluding policy from especially some of the networks just to focus on Russia. Would I be right to think that you're not just concerned that the media isn't covering policy enough because the scandal is sensational? You also think, maybe as a progressive who's skeptical of our national security establishment and who has seen a lifetime of mindless Russia bashing, that the scandal is overblown and empowering the wrong institutions like the NSA and the FBI?
You said it as well as I could, Brian. I think that progressives have lost sight in using the Russia investigations to stymie the Trump agenda, overturn Trump. And they're legitimate questions, but the collateral damage is likely or already with us, a new Cold War. New Cold Wars are always bad for progressive budgets, progressive voices, voices of dissent, spaces shut down. And I think we need, and it's neither pro-Trump nor pro-Putin, we need a working relationship with Russia to deal with a number of critical issues, escalating nuclear arms race. Syria demands a political resolution. We're on the verge of an escalating conflagration. And I think we've lost sight of that in often baseless Russia baiting.
But the world has also changed. Russia has changed. Like in the old days, Russia was an autocracy that was also a symbol of the left. Today,
I never felt it was a symbol of the left. And Putin, you know, I've been covering Russia for 35 years, and my closest friends are editors of a leading independent newspaper where the journalists have been killed, independent journalists, people who are working with NGOs. I'm cold-eyed about Russia. On the other hand, I just think it's debilitating for our politics, and I think we need to be cold-eyed. We need to have an investigation, investigations. But I also think, just politically also, that Democrats need to be speaking to people's lives and to all the issues like jobs and health care and a different foreign policy, Brian. I mean, Bernie Sanders began in his campaign to speak to a progressive realism or internationalism. The United States should not be about regime change or active intervention. Trump ran on an insult campaign, but he did speak to things he's betrayed brutally. I mean, we're escalating in the Middle East. We may be at war with Iran. Saudi Arabia, with our assistance, is brutally hurting, you know, civilians in Yemen. So there's a whole set of issues, and he's outsourced escalation in Afghanistan to the military. We need to step back, and we need realism and restraint in our engagement with the world. And so I think we're in a perilous moment, and I fear that progressives and Democrats aren't speaking again to what they see as how the U.S. can engage the world. And the Russia investigations, while needed in many ways, again sap the oxygen from crafting an alternative foreign policy.
It is interesting that if there was anything you could call the liberal side of nationalism, they've walked away from each element of it. Retrenchment of the military, spending more government money on services
right.
for the working class, and infrastructure as well. Was supposed to be the liberal side of Bannonism. That part's gotten all buried.
Oh, they've betrayed. This administration has, I think, you know, betrayed itself, but also been captured by, you know, those who, of the national security forces. But I do think Democrats have lost sight of, you know, we need resources to rebuild at home. We're not isolationists, but we need a different engagement, often demilitarized. And that has not been on the agenda. And I think it's an absence, something the nation is planning. We're going to begin to do a series of special issues to lay out what a kind of progressive realism, internationalism could be. I think it's desperately needed at this time. I, for example, when Trump went to Europe, I mean, if, you know, the people in Europe are very wary of Trump, as they should be, laughing at him. But, you know, Merkel said, we're going to take our fate in our own hands. Let Europe find its own way. I think that's healthy. And I think, you know, while we have Trump as president, we need in the wilderness progressives, liberals, to think hard about what American engagement with the world is, what internationalism is of a true kind. And I don't see it right now. And I think, you know, there are people like Chris Murphy who's tried to lay out a progressive agenda. And I think, as I said, Bernie Sanders began to in the campaign, but only fitfully because it's not his real interest.
Right.
But there's work to be done.
Katrina Vandenhoevel with Food for Thought. She is editor and publisher of The Nation magazine. A really good place, by the way, to see some of Katrina's writing is in The Washington Post. That's weekly now, isn't it?
It is. It is weekly. It is. There's much to write about, but it's demanding. But thank you for noting it, Brian.
Katrina, thanks a lot.
Thank you.